that doesn't matter. I hate concerts. Okay, nice. Very welcome, Rick. I'm already a huge fan of you because I met your colleague, V, from the Bitcoin Way, and we had an episode that was pretty deep and that made me realize I need to be way more extreme in the way I express myself. And it was just such a delightful conversation. And this is why I'm so happy to have you here now. Very welcome, Rick.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for having me. And you spoke to V, right? And he's a great guy. And, you know, he says it how it is. And I think that's really important. And I think that's probably a product of his experience in life. You know, he had some really bad experiences with the banks and all that sort of thing. And I think if something like that happens to you, you stop dancing around the topic and being soft about it, and you tell it just kind of really how it is. So it doesn't surprise me that you found the conversation with V interesting, because he gets right to the heart of the matter and maybe talks about things that most people sort of shy away from. So and I've had a similar experience to V, so you might expect, yeah, I'll probably talk quite directly about the risks out there and things people might want to consider.
That's so nice. For everyone who's listening, this time it's not so much about unschooling, but about Bitcoin. Because I think Bitcoin and unschooling are highly related. I think these two things are the way to create a freedom-based lifestyle. And this time we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the Bitcoin stuff. And we already, before we started recording, we talked about what we're going to touch. And I'm already looking forward to it. And yeah, maybe I will just let you roam free. You just guide me through your universe of Bitcoin stuff, please.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you talk about unschooling, right? Because one of the reasons I got into Bitcoin in the first place was, you know, like a lot of people, I went off to university and I did a lot of training in sort of management and marketing and also quite a lot in economics. This is where it gets interesting, because what I can tell you now is, you know, I mean, that was a while ago, right, that I graduated. But the next 10 years studying Bitcoin led me to this realization that, well, basically, everything I was taught about Keynesian economics is total nonsense. The economic principles that Keynesians believe in are just purely illogical. And it was just amazing to me. I thought, hang on, how have I done a 4-year degree and we've studied economics and nobody has even brought it to my attention that there's an entire other school of economics out there, the Austrian school of economics, which is kind of in a direct opposition to the you know, economics that we're taught. I ended up on this crazy journey, me and my dad, just getting really obsessed by Bitcoin. We were really, really early to it. I mean, we were buying Bitcoin back in, I think it's like 2012, 2013, right? So when it was really early, the coins were crazy cheap. I mean, you know, we were buying stuff for £30 per Bitcoin. A lot of people ask me, okay, so how did you get in that early? And how come you didn't just ignore it when you first saw it like everyone else? And we were just lucky. We like landed in this perfect Venn diagram of our interests. So, you know, growing up, my dad had always been quite sort of, I guess you would say, anti-establishment, right? So even before we discovered Bitcoin, yeah, I'm so lucky, honestly. I have no idea. So like, you know, by the age of 12 years old, you know, he's sitting me down and saying, Rick, you need to understand that the banking sector is a total scam, that they operate fractional reserve banking, that they print money out of thin air. And I guess what you could say is we understood the problem that Bitcoin solves before we ever discovered Bitcoin. And then, you know, he's a software developer, so he understands tech very well. And I'd gone off and sort of studied economics. And then when we found Bitcoin and we understood the problem, and we're also quite into technology, it just landed right in this sweet spot where it was crazy. You know, when you find something and you just become obsessed by it because you've never seen anything like it. That's essentially what happened to us and why we got into Bitcoin. And yeah, never lost that passion for it, never lost that obsession for it. And I think quite rightly, you know, the things that Bitcoin's achieving and the possibility it offers us to build a better a better world and a better financial system is huge. So it's just really compelling. And if you go down the rabbit hole, very few people escape it. Once they see it, they think, wow, this stuff's going to change the world.
True. So true. People are always asking me, because I always tell them, this is going to change the world. And if it's not changing the world, it's going to change your world. At least that is true. And they're always like, yeah, but who invented it? And I'm like, dude, I have no clue. And the day we find out, it might be a very shitty day because it might change our whole vision, idea, whatever, or concept of what's going on. The worst case is it's a Trojan. Is it right to say that Trojan horse, like a trap made by who knows? But in the end, there's so many little information we can collect on the way back where it came from. So I can now be like 90% sure, okay, the story we think is true. And let's hope Satoshi Nakamoto never comes back so it doesn't change
Sure.
the whole
I mean,
narrative.
well, it's really interesting you bring that up because I'm conscious this isn't like a hardcore Bitcoin podcast, right? So there's probably people listening who are pretty new to it and just trying to get their head around it. And if you're new to
True.
Bitcoin, the idea that some anonymous person 15 years ago launched Bitcoin into the world and we don't know who that is, yeah, it's a nuts, that's a nuts story. Like it sounds unbelievable and it sounds kind of crazy. And people worry, well, doesn't that mean that this, anonymous figure somewhere out there in the world controls Bitcoin and might come back and change it or mess with it? Or, like you say, is it, did the CIA invent it and then they're trying to lure us into this world that they control and get more control over us? Well, to sort of put that thinking to bed, my view of it is this, one of the best things about Bitcoin and one of the things we love about it is the fact that it's completely open source. So whether Satoshi is out there still or not, or whatever he's doing, doesn't actually matter very much. He is not in control of Bitcoin any more than I'm in control of Bitcoin. And that's not something I have to trust. That's something I can go and verify because we can all go and look at the code that runs Bitcoin and we can all go and understand how it operates. And once you do understand how it operates, you understand that it's a distributed system run by millions of people around the world who all just follow a simple set of rules. Now, Satoshi could come out of the woodwork and say, right, I'm going to change the rules. But given the way Bitcoin works, if everyone decides, well, no, we're going to stick to this set of rules, he doesn't have any influence or power. I mean, he controls a lot of Bitcoin, right? Like he owns a lot of it and it hasn't moved in 15 years. But because you can verify it, because it's completely transparent and you can prove to yourself how this thing works, you can give yourself the confidence that actually nobody controls this thing and nobody ever can control this thing. So, I mean, and talking about the CIA, I don't think it's in their interest to invent something like Bitcoin. Because what Bitcoin does, if you imagine the government now has a lot of control over your life because it controls the monetary system, right? So when they print money out of thin air, they're essentially taxing you by making your money worth less. And they control this whole financial system. Bitcoin flips that on its head and says, actually, nobody controls the money in the Bitcoin system. Now, the ability to print money out of thin air is a hugely powerful tool for the Federal Reserve and the government. They are not going to give up that power lightly, and I don't believe they would invent something that would remove that power that they have. I don't follow the logic with that. So I think that the sort of theories around is it a CIA controlled sort of sneak attack? I find if you do enough research, I think you can discover that that's actually extremely unlikely.
True. I really hope that. Let's see. You know what I really like is sometimes I call unschooling decentralized education because you're not going to one place and getting propagandized by one crazy person, but you are like all over the place. You are learning from everyone around you, no matter the age. I don't care. So I think there are huge parallels between decentralized money and decentralized education, because in the end, it's all about freedom, freedom-based lifestyle and so on. And what you said about control, controlling the money and stuff like that, I think a huge thing for, I don't want to dive too deep into the unschooling stuff now. Controlling the money is something, because a lot of parents are always like, if I don't send my kid to school, I need to pay this and that and blah, blah, blah. If they can't pressure you into paying something because you're all in Bitcoin, then this discussion comes to an end anyway. I know that not in every country the families have the option to say, okay, no, I'm going all into Bitcoin, so nobody can pressure me into this and that, blah, blah. I know, but this is one thing, maybe one option. And this is exactly something that gave me so much strength in going forward with my unschooling journey, because I was so sure, like, there. I can't pay because from the normal point of view, I don't have no money. So what are they going to do? I really like that a lot. Yes, I think something we wanted to talk about maybe a bit more in detail is about self-custody and these things. And I have a stupid story to share.
Okay.
I've been to Madeira pretty much 1 year ago. And I was traveling with my kid. We did a little world schooling journey. We have been to Germany living with my grandma for a couple of weeks, then went to Madeira to check out that place. And I'm a traveler person, so I always have my hard wallet, my cold wallet with me, my hardware stuff. So, and I had this in my backpack. And I was so stupid. I was so stupid. We've been to a little like a natural swimming pond and these kind of things, and I just put my bag in a very secure spot, and I thought, I'm not really afraid of humans, like, because my stuff looks like I'm poor, I don't care. So nobody's like, oh, she owns Bitcoin. So I just put it down and everything, went to the water, and like 2 seconds later there was like the biggest wave I ever see in my life. And I'm living at the Atlantic Ocean. I see waves all the fucking day. Right now I can see the waves, but this wave was huge, and it just took away all our shit. Like, there were like 30 people, and most of them went home naked, you know what I mean? And I just saw my backpack, like my, and I was like, okay. And I told my kid, we need to save my backpack, because it is in a waterproof thing. So I knew that it would survive. If I can just recover my backpack, my Bitcoin is safe and everything. And I know it's just the hardware. I can easily exchange and blah and restore, but I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to have my stuff back. And we were able to find my backpack and all that chaotic, because all the people were running around searching for their stuff, and there were, it was more water coming in, and you can imagine the situation. And in the end, I was almost naked. I lost the shoe, but I had my Bitcoin, and I was so, so happy for that. And somebody told me, like, yeah, you can just store it on an exchange, you know that. And I was like, even worse. That's even worse, dude. Can you imagine? This was just a stupid mistake of mine. But just imagine storing your Bitcoin on an exchange is an even bigger mistake, I think. So now it's your turn. Tell me why this is true, why this is stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring up the point that people say, oh, this would be so much easier if you leave it on an exchange. I think that's a really bad idea. And let me explain why. So, you know, over the sort of 10 years that I've been involved with Bitcoin, I have seen so many exchanges blow up or run off with people's money, or, you know, just total mess. So just to reel some off the top of my head, you know, FTX blew up, loads of people lost their Bitcoin. Mt. Gox blew up, loads of people lost their Bitcoin. You had Voyager, you had Celsius. I mean, I've forgotten more than I can remember over the 10 years of different exchanges that have blown up. And the reality is, had I ever had my Bitcoin sitting on an exchange in those 10 years, the likelihood that I would have lost my money would be really quite high. So, you know, it's almost, we need to get people into that mindset of thinking, no, the exchange isn't safe. That's not the right way to think about this. Exchanges have proven time and time again, this isn't just theoretical, it happens all the time. So for example, the people who got wrapped up in the FTX collapse, I've heard some of them are getting, you know, now credited through the bankruptcy proceeding, right? They're getting some money back. But I've heard that for every Bitcoin they had in the exchange, they're now getting paid $16,000 in cash. But that's wild, because one Bitcoin today is trading at $50,000. So, you know, you get a huge haircut, and they're even lucky to get anything back. You know, most of the Mt. Gox creditors haven't seen any money back. A lot of exchanges, you know, your money's just gone. So the idea that an exchange is safer than self-custody, I think, is just factually incorrect.
And it's
not
your money.
That doesn't mean that there aren't risks.
Yeah.
Precisely. And you know, that's the crazy thing. It's like the antithesis of Bitcoin. Satoshi invented something that allows you to be the bank and you to look after your own money. And yet people are still stuck in that paradigm, that idea that someone else should look after your money for you. So it's kind of like exchanges are just banks again. They're just banks, but this time they look after Bitcoin instead of dollars. And they're just as untrustworthy as banks, and they're just as risky.
I think I somehow lost you. Can you repeat the last sentence? I'm very sorry.
No problem. Yeah. Basically, I was just talking about the fact that, you know, exchanges are just the same as banks. The only difference is an exchange looks after your Bitcoin, whereas a traditional bank looks after your dollars. The whole point of Bitcoin is for it to be a peer-to-peer network. And one of the greatest things about it is that you no longer have to trust anyone else to look after your money, because as we've seen time and time again, they will break that trust. So, you know, buying Bitcoin and holding it on an exchange is a pretty crazy, pretty risky thing to do. And people should absolutely see self-custody as the superior solution. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't make mistakes with self-custody as well, like your story about the wave, right? Like this stuff can
so
happen,
stupid.
Right? Yeah, like I guess the manager who runs the vault in the bank rarely has the vault keys in his swimming shorts when he goes to the beach, right? So, you know, it's that kind of thing. But also, you know, one of the reasons I'm sort of, I think we're back. Yeah, one of the reasons I'm so interested in this is I had quite a bad experience myself just recently, actually. So, you know, me and my dad, we'd been saving our Bitcoin for a good 10 years, and we did have it in self-custody, but we made some pretty critical mistakes. The long story short is that we got hacked back in September last year, and we discovered in November that the hacker had actually stolen all of our Bitcoin. Now, this was quite a serious theft. You know, it was 25 Bitcoin in total. So, you know, north of $1 million worth of Bitcoin.
That hurts.
Yeah, it's a savage experience. You know, I was all in Bitcoin. I don't see any logical reason why you would ever keep any of your wealth in fiat currency, right? That doesn't make sense to me. So, you know, all of my work, every project I've ever worked on, everything I've ever produced for the last 10 years, unfortunately, was taken from us. That's a really tough pill to swallow. I can't quite describe how it's like driving back to your house, right? And realizing it's just gone. It just doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
Like every single thing. And you find out within 1 minute, you know, you have all these plans, what you're going to do with it, how you're going to build your life out. Yeah, it's totally surreal. I mean, the crazy thing about this story is me and my dad were actually on holiday in El Salvador when we found out. So honestly, you couldn't believe it. You couldn't write it. Like, so we'd waited 10 years, we'd saved our Bitcoin, and we were really excited to go to El Salvador on sort of like a father and son trip, you know, a bit of a celebration. Let's see what's going on in El Salvador, now Bitcoin country. We went to a Bitcoin conference, we're having a whale of a time, and yeah, then we find out that we've been hacked and we're stuck in the middle of the jungle, miles away from home, everything's lost. It felt like living through a Netflix special, honestly. It was, you just can't quite believe that it's real. But anyway, look, I don't want to dwell too much on that, so much as to say that this is why I really want to get out there and speak to people about self-custody and how to get it right and not make the silly mistakes we did. You know, having been in the Bitcoin space for so long, some of the mistakes we made were really quite embarrassing. We did know better and we just got really complacent. So it's difficult for me to come out and talk about it because a lot of people will sort of go, Jesus, what an idiot. And we were idiots, but do you know what I mean? But the thing is, if I can share that we were idiots and other people think, oh shit, I'm doing the same thing. And it means that they correct their mistake and don't go through the experience we had, then I'm quite happy to share it and get a little bit of egg on my face, right? It's fine. I mean, the long story short is, you know, this is the advice I would give to someone new to Bitcoin. It does require some skill and some education in order to get really good at using it and to be really secure and safe when you do it. Now, if you already are a cybersecurity professional and you've been working on that for 30 years, then you've probably already got all the skills you need to secure your Bitcoin safely. If you're not a cybersecurity expert, then maybe you should consider hiring and working with some experts who can train you up. I'm not saying you can't, I mean, there's a million YouTube videos, right? And you could go and learn it all by yourself. But the analogy I give people is I quite like playing golf, right? When I want to get better at golf, I go and hire a golf coach who teaches me how to make my swing better. And that's the fastest way to improve. If next week I decide I want to learn jujitsu, I don't just start watching YouTube videos and rolling around on the floor with my teddy bear, right? I go to a dojo and I find a coach and he teaches me how to do jujitsu. So, you know, if you're interested in Bitcoin, you want to become a Bitcoiner, then my advice would be hire a coach. You know, someone like Tony, who you mentioned from the Bitcoin Way, you know, within 3 or 4 lessons, he will get you up to a position where you're pretty damn safe, pretty proficient. And instead of spending thousands of hours digging through YouTube tutorials and thinking, am I even doing the right thing? I'm not 100% sure. Maybe hire a coach and get it done properly. But the exchange is not the answer. Self-custody is, but you have to get it right.
So true. And you know what I love the most is that so many people out there that I meet are more and more going into the direction of no self-custody all the way, not only Bitcoin, but self-sovereign lifestyle when it comes to food, education, finances, all the stuff. I love it. And it's a huge movement, I feel. And we are moving towards a very, I think, exciting times. A lot of people are like, oh my God, the world is going down. And I feel like, no, this is the beginning of our time. This is what I came here for. Like, we are seeing the downfall of whatever is there, and now we are rising. And so this is why we need to be prepared. Tell me more. Can you guide me through the perfect way to you buy your Bitcoin. I mean, KYC free Bitcoin is it's hard to get nowadays. But do you think there is still a good option to buy KYC free coins? I'm sorry, I can't speak today.
All right. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I'm conscious of your audience might not be that far down the Bitcoin rabbit hole yet. So I just want to go back a little bit to what you were saying about the analogy with, you know, producing your own food and your own education. You know, I think you've hit on something that's really important there, because look, we all know that the food in the supermarket is filled with loads of chemicals and rubbish and poison, and it's really bad for you. And if you're anything like me, you find it quite difficult to actually source food that you know is healthy, is produced the right way, and all that stuff. So one of the solutions, like you say, is you grow your own food. But I'm guessing what people realize quite quickly is that that's a lot of work. You know, you have to think about crop rotation. You have to think about yield, about the quality of soil. You have to think about, well, how many things do I have to grow to actually sustain me? And how do I store the food, right? So when it's out of season, I still have some. The point is, it all requires proof of work. You have to put that, if you want good quality food, you have to put the effort in to make that happen. Similar idea with education. And I think where you've hit the nail on the head is it's exactly the same with Bitcoin. Bitcoin gives you all these amazing benefits, just like homegrown food will give you. But just like the homegrown food, it requires you to educate yourself a little bit, you know, take on responsibilities yourself rather than outsourcing them. So instead of outsourcing your nutritional needs to a supermarket and a big conglomerate food machine, you do it yourself. When you use Bitcoin, you become the bank, right? You're the bank. You don't need to rely on anyone else anymore. The key similarity here is that if you want to be a bank, you also are going to have to take on all the responsibilities that come with it. There's loads of benefits, but they're not free. You have to put the work in and you have to learn self-custody. So to sort of move on from that, and you know, if anyone listening is interested in, okay, well, how do I train myself? How do I go further? I don't want to get like super technical and just scare the life out of everyone and put them off, because honestly, it's learnable. A lot of it's new. Like maybe if you started growing food, right? You didn't understand that, you know, the soil needs this much phosphorus, this much potassium, and all this for this certain crop, and it feels technical, but you get used to it and you get better at it. The same thing happens with Bitcoin, and I do believe anyone can learn self-custody. So what I'll try and do is, in as simple terms as I can, kind of break down the things you should be thinking about and why they're important. So number one, you hit the nail on the head is KYC, right? So a lot of exchanges where you go to buy Bitcoin, they're going to ask you to give a copy of your passport, you know, your mother's maiden name, you know, all of that stuff, right? They want to dig
Your
right into your privacy and
firstborn.
know everything about you. Yeah, it's a nightmare, right? And it is tricky to avoid because most of the exchanges are going to do this. I want to first talk about the risks associated with that because I think people don't take or value their privacy enough these days. So let me tell you how KYC directly impacted me. So one of the reasons that we got hacked and all of our money was stolen is because our KYC details were leaked from an exchange that was hacked. So we never kept our coins on the exchange, which was a smart thing to do. But one of the exchanges we bought the coins at was called Mt. Gox, and that famously got hacked. I think it was back in 2013 or 14. Now, at the time, we thought, ah, we did the right thing. We never lost our Bitcoin because we didn't leave it at Mt. Gox. And we just didn't really think anything else of it. Since we got hacked and we worked with law enforcement, we actually learned that we were probably targeted specifically because when Mt. Gox was hacked, the hacker also got all the information about who we were, where we lived, how much Bitcoin we bought, where we sent the Bitcoin next. So think about this, right? The attacker has probably targeted us specifically because they know who we are, what our name is, and how much Bitcoin we have. So we're a juicy target. There's 25 Bitcoins sitting right there, right? So what I want people to take from that is every time you give out this information, it's not if that information ends up out there, it's when. They get hacked all the time. So connecting your identity to your Bitcoin stack is an attack surface. If someone knows how much you own and it's a lot and it's got some value, there are lots of people who would love to take it away from you. So if you can buy non-KYC Bitcoin, you really should. And do you know what? Even if it comes at a slight premium, you know, it costs you 5% more when you buy it. In my opinion, that's worthwhile because privacy has value
Yes.
and you're basically paying to protect yourself just that little bit more. If it's a few percent and you're planning on holding the Bitcoin for 10 years, it's likely to go up in value a lot. You're not going to worry about the 3% at the other end. So worth doing. So I'll give you a couple of ideas. I mean, there are solutions for buying non-KYC Bitcoin. So there's one thing people could look up is something called the BISQ network, which is BISQ. And that's a place that you can go and exchange Bitcoin peer to peer with other people. So in simple terms, you kind of pay money into their bank account and they send you their Bitcoin and there's no middleman in between. I get that for a lot of people, they'll think, well, how do I know he's going to send the Bitcoin? Well, basically these platforms are very clever and they create an escrow service that keeps everybody honest. I'm not going to go into explaining exactly how that works, but it's legitimate and it's an effective way of buying Bitcoin without KYC. And there are other providers. Another one is called RoboSats. That's another good venue to pick up non-KYC coin. You could also think about finding a Bitcoin ATM. Again, you probably pay a little bit more than you would an exchange, but you can put cash into these machines, and you can buy Bitcoin. You can also sell your Bitcoin there and exchange it for cash. And in a lot of cases, you won't have to give up your KYC information. But one of my favorite ways is to actually just earn it, right? So, if you're busy at home and you're producing all this amazing food because you're self-sovereign and you're growing all this food, there's a chance you might have a glut of potatoes, more than you can eat or whatever, right? At a certain point in harvest. Well, look, if you go and sell that harvest to someone, down the road, you can do a direct transaction with them and they'll pay you some Bitcoin. So, the further you go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, the more you understand that you can just operate outside of the traditional financial system and you can do business with people directly. No one's going to be in the middle saying what you can and can't do. And if I paid you some Bitcoin today, Alex, for some vegetables, the only people that know that that happened was me and you. So I like the idea of earning it. If you've got a business, start giving your clients the option to pay you in Bitcoin, and then you'll earn a load of Bitcoin that no one knows that you have. It's really good.
True. You know what I really like? That it's peer to peer because I'm living in the middle of nowhere. It's just nature around me and a couple of people, maybe five. And what I see is everything that comes from nature is basically peer to peer. There is never like someone going to my tomatoes, picking them up, and then bringing them to me, selling me my tomatoes from my garden. So everything that we do here on this little island where I live, it's peer to peer. And this is how nature is working. So I know maybe this is a bit hippy dippy lifestyle thinking, but what I really feel is like if we don't do stuff peer to peer, we should just don't do it at all, because this is against my logical fundamental understanding of how nature works. Doesn't make sense at all. And you know what I like as well? I wanted to say también. I don't know why. You know what I like también? That it's proof of work, because kids are proof of work as well. If you see it like that, you put in a lot of work and they grow and they are getting smarter and cooler and funny and all of these things. It's proof of your fucking work you put in as a mom or dad or whatever, you know? And I don't see that
100%.
in like school system stuff. That's not proof of work for me. That's not proof of work. Unschooling, homeschooling, what schooling, that is proof of work for me. And this is how nature intended it to be, I think.
I love the proof of work analogy. That's one thing that Bitcoin, I think, fundamentally changes about a lot of people. Like a lot of Bitcoiners who've been around a while, we talk about this a lot, how, it's Bitcoin is just money, right? It is just money, but its design leads you to other sort of like revelations and understandings about the nature of how the world works. So, just like you say, I mean, look, let's say you have a good marriage. That's proof of work because people have to put work in to build a
True.
good marriage. You have well-educated, happy kids. That's proof of work, right? If you're lazy and you stick them in front of YouTube for 8 hours a day, you're not going to have smart and well-adjusted kids. And the reason is you didn't put the work in. Anything worthwhile in this life, anything worth having, requires and needs some work. And it's funny because the current financial system we have, I think, has upended the way that works quite a significant way. And it's also changed people's understanding of the world around them. We live in an instant a world where everybody wants instant gratification, right? I'm hungry, so I want to push three buttons on my phone and a burger arrives at my front door. I mean, you see it all the time in the younger generations now. They're so stuck to their phones that whenever they try to do something difficult and it doesn't instantly work, they'll tend to give up rather than seeing that as part of the process and the journey to mastering something. We've lost this sort of connection between if you want something really good, it might take you 5 or 10 years to get it, of concerted practice, right? So yeah, I think the analogy between sort of being a Bitcoiner, being self-sovereign, understanding the fundamental sort of laws of the universe and how it works, they're all quite closely entwined with each other. So It would amaze me if someone who was into homeschooling and into growing their own food and being self-sovereign couldn't quite quickly understand that Bitcoin operates in a dichotomy that resonates with them rather than the fiat system, which is kind of the antithesis of everything that they believe in and work towards, you know?
So true. So true. I like that. You know what? I want to talk about nodes with you because a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, my kid started to build Lightning nodes. Now he gave up and now it's just pieces somewhere. I don't know. I'm gonna write that down because I really want to know what happened to our node. Okay, so did that. Gonna research. Yeah, tell me, because I considered that if I'm a Bitcoiner and if I'm all in and all these things, and if I want to teach my kid how money works, like sound money works, then I wanted to him to know how a node works, how to build one, how to connect it to the network and everything, to make him feel the importance of his individual input into all of that. So tell me more about why is it so important to run your own node?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I think maybe we can try some analogies again, especially with the, I like the food production one, right? So if you want to be truly self-sufficient with your food, you're going to have to start thinking about things like fertilizer, right? Are you going to buy it or are you going to make some yourself, right? By composting and creating your own fertilizers and stuff. Using Bitcoin without running your own node is similar to growing all your own fruit and veg, but still needing to rely on some other third party for, I don't know, your seeds or your fertilizer or your water or whatever. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing because you might have someone in your network that produces these things and you have a great relationship. But using Bitcoin without running your own node is kind of similar. The reason is, let's say I want to send a transaction over the network. I'm going to have to broadcast that transaction through a Bitcoin node, and then it propagates around the system so everyone else can see it. The problem is if I don't run my own node, then that means that I have to connect to an unknown third party node out there in the ecosystem to broadcast that transaction. Now, chances are 99.9% of the time, that is an honest node that's doing exactly what you want it to do and what you expect it to do. But you still have that little tether of reliance on someone else's hardware and someone else's software to send your message out into the world. You're also revealing a little bit more of your privacy than maybe you'd like to. Because obviously you're broadcasting a transaction and someone else's node is propagating that. Now, I'm not saying that all these people running nodes are going to be particularly interested in you or want to track everything you do, but what running your own node gives you is that you know that you're broadcasting the transaction, your node is following the rules that you set, that you're the one broadcasting the transaction, and no one else is going to sort of get in the middle or be tracking what you're doing or trying to connect your IP address to the transaction you've just broadcast and all that stuff. So, is running node an essential? No, you can still send Bitcoin transactions without running your own node. Just like you can still grow fruits and veggies in your garden, and buy your soil from someone else, right? But if the person with the soil ever starts, I don't know, putting something dodgy in the soil or just straight up vanishes, you've got a problem. If you're creating this stuff yourself, just like if you're running your own node, then you're just not reliant on other people. And here's the thing with Bitcoin, it's not a case of everyone wants instant results. They want to buy Bitcoin, get rich next week, and that's the extent of what they're thinking about. Bitcoin is just a tool. It's just a really seriously powerful tool. It's like a bazooka, right? Now imagine you had an army of infantry and you just handed them all bazookas and you didn't give them any training. They'd start blowing their heads off and causing a right mess. So, in the same way that you wouldn't give, a huge cleaving knife to a 4-year-old child in the kitchen, giving someone Bitcoin and them not going through any education or training is risky. So Non-KYC, good for your privacy. Running a Bitcoin node, reducing your reliance on others, and also improving your privacy. Both things are really important, and people should really take them seriously. We ended up, it sounds theoretical, like it'll never happen, but we were targeted and lost all our money because of, well, KYC played a role. We made some crucial mistakes in the way we did our self-custody. But our information being out there certainly played a role in it.
That's harsh. Another thing that I wanted to ask you, because I worked as a journalist for quite some time, and in that time there was a huge movement against Bitcoin Mixer and these kind of things. And then I was thinking, okay, if they are against Bitcoin Mixers, I'm gonna love them. I know it. So I was deep diving into what does a mixer do. And basically, you just put your, it's like a mixer. I love food. This is so awesome to talk about Bitcoin and food. It's so easy. So you just put your food Bitcoin into the mixer, you push, and everyone gets his portion. So you bring an apple, I bring a banana, and these kind of things. And in the end, everyone gets their portion back. But very different portion, of course, because it has been mixed in the mixer. And in the end, this is it just makes sense. And since they started to go against Bitcoin Mixer and telling people like, yeah, your Bitcoins will be banned and you can't sell them on our exchange because they went through a Bitcoin Mixer, makes it even more interesting for me. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, I love this discussion. I think it's fascinating, right? Because, well, first of all, your description of a mixer is really accurate. There is some complexity to it, but for the layman who wants to understand generally what it does, it's like, having 10 friends around a table. They all put a penny in a glass jar, and then they shake it up, and everyone takes their penny out again. Now, you'll end up with the same amount of money you did before you mixed it. You'll still have a penny. But no one really knows, was it your original penny or did you end up with someone else's penny? And all it really does is it just makes it harder to follow where all the Bitcoin's going because it's just been shaken up and mixed. It's really useful to mention that after talking about KYC because some people might hear us talking and go, oh my God, all my Bitcoin is KYC'd. It's too late. I've made a mistake. The good thing about coin mixing is you can give yourself more forward privacy. So, okay, they know you bought it, they know where you moved it to, but then you mix it all up and they don't know where it went next. It doesn't remove the fact that people know that you bought it or there's some information out there about you, but it does mean that attackers and governments and these sorts of people are going to ha find it hard to prove what you still have, what you did with it, where did it go. And it kind of makes you private again. So that's really useful. So there are some people, like you say, that push back against coin mixing because they say things like, oh, well, you shouldn't do that because you're never going to be able to then sell it on an exchange. It'll be blacklisted. You'll have tainted sort of Bitcoin. And I think it's just they have some sort of point there, right? If someone comes out with regulation and says, we will not deal with mixed coins, then it might cause you some difficulty if you want to use it with certain venues. However, I think this is a really, really short-sighted view of things. And again, I'll give you an analogy that I think is really interesting, right? You might have heard this statistic that there isn't a single £20 note in the UK that you could take to a lab and test where you wouldn't find traces of cocaine on it, right? Because over the years, everyone's rolled them up and they've snorted cocaine through a £20 note. And that activity has happened for so many years that eventually now every single £20 note has some trace elements of cocaine on it. So everything's tainted. Think about like Bitcoin, there's only 21 million Bitcoin. And on a long enough time period, let's say this system runs for 200 years, how on earth are you going to be able to keep track of what's tainted, what's not, what's used in nefarious activity, what's not? Like the £20 note, I think eventually, on a long enough timeline, you reach a point where every Bitcoin has a little trace of cocaine on it, if you use that same analogy, right? So, does that mean that people are going to say, well, I don't want that Bitcoin? My guess is that, this is a scarce asset. There's only so many of them. Will people, I mean, if I gave you a £20 note, would you really care that, 17 years ago, some drug dealer bought a McDonald's with it? Probably not. You can't possibly keep track of it. You don't care. It's not anything to do with your transaction. So I think, you know, they might play silly games like that in the short term, but it's not something I would worry about massively over the long term. And also, people are saying, well, you know, what if you ever want to sell it back to dollars, Rick? And now you can't because the exchange won't deal with mixed coins. At that point, I'm like, hang on. We need to unwind and go back a few chapters, right, into why we're interested in Bitcoin in the first place. I have no
Exactly.
interest in selling my Bitcoin for fiat money. Now, a lot of people think that's crazy because they still view Bitcoin as an investable asset, like a stock or something, right? And the reason they buy stocks is because the stock goes up in value against dollars, and then they sell the stock and they end up with more dollars. Bitcoin is not an investable asset in that sense. Bitcoin is just money, and it's just a better money than dollars. So the logic that follows that you might buy some Bitcoin with inferior money, the superior money becomes more valuable than the inferior money, but the whole point that you did it was to end up with a bigger pile of inferior money. I'm like, hang on. We're getting really confused here, right? And okay, I get it. Bitcoin's crazy volatile, right? It goes up, down, up, down, up, down. But my
But
experience is
does
I
it
held this
though?
stuff for,
Or is
yeah,
it the
good
dollar?
question. My view would be that the dollar is extremely volatile and tanks in value, whereas one Bitcoin is always worth one Bitcoin. But you know, here's the other thing. People are crazy. They're like, well, hang on, don't you want to keep your rainy day fund in dollars, Rick? And I, or in my case, I'm in the UK in pounds. And I tell them, I don't know why you think that's safe. Because the last 3 years, the British pound has lost 33% of its purchasing value in 3 years. Just 3 years. Now, I held Bitcoin for 10 years, and you know, it started with, say, £5,000 worth of purchasing value, and after 10 years, it had £1 million worth of purchasing value. You know, again, we're back to this thing we were talking about earlier, is like people have a very short-term instant gratification sort of mindset. They don't realize that what we're witnessing is a move from an inferior type of money to a superior type of money. And they're still running around trying to figure out how they can use the superior money to make more of the inferior money. And I think that just means they haven't gone deep enough into understanding what Bitcoin actually is. So look, you know, if someone wants to say you can't use mixed coins here or there, I'm just going to ignore them. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I know there's a hell of a lot of people out there just like me who, if I said, can I give you some of this Bitcoin to buy something from you? They're just going to say yes. And who cares what the government thinks and everyone else, right? We're
So
leaving
true.
them behind. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly that. You're stepping out of that zone and you are stepping into a very different universe. With this, all of that shit doesn't matter anymore. And the most interesting part, I think, it's the same for education. All that stuff that is happening over there, it has nothing to do with your family and with real people. And in the end, we are going back to peer-to-peer. Everything is going back to peer-to-peer, how it used to be. And all of that fear on the other side is just fear. That it's not the truth. And if you're looking through that noise and bullshit, in the end, it has nothing to do with your life. Nothing. Because my neighbor, if sometimes I buy weed and I pay in with my Lightning stuff, and he's not like, that went through a mixer, didn't it? Like, he doesn't care at all, dude. He doesn't care.
No one cares. No one cares. You know, we
No
need to
one
stop
cares.
asking for permission. Why
Yeah.
are we still asking for permission for anything? Why are you asking for permission whether or not
Yeah.
you can educate your child as you see fit? Why are you asking
Yeah.
for permission to access your own money in the bank? You know, I'll
It's
give you an example.
Stockholm
You know, in
syndrome.
Scotland, it's insane. I live in Scotland, right? And I don't know, it surprises most people when I tell them it's the drug capital of Europe, right? Yeah, it's crazy. It's got a tiny population, but it's the drug capital of
Yeah.
Europe. Like, you can walk down most high streets in Scotland and you will see people that are on heroin and all this. I mean, it's wild, right? Now, in that same country, it's illegal for me to buy raw milk.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? What is that?
What? We've got politicians debating whether they're going to create safe rooms where you can go and get free drugs and take them in a safe room. Now, look, I'm not an expert in this. Maybe that is a better solution to it being on the street. I'm just kind of putting a pin in that. But I'm just drawing attention to the fact that they're busy making rooms where you can get free drugs. And yet, if I want to just have some milk from a cow, this is some dangerous, like, crazy thing, right? And yeah, I don't know how we get everyone's mindset to shift because they're so used to asking for permission. I mean, you saw it with these crazy vaccine mandates. I was left totally bemused. They locked us up in our own houses for 2 years, and then they pushed these pharmaceutical products on us, which are profit-making private products by a private organization, and told you they would take your freedoms away if you exercised your own choice and said no, thank you. You know, even I was surprised at how compliant people were, and I think there's going to be a long journey before people are sort of where we are, Alex, where they're ready to say no. You know, I'm going to decide what I'm going to do with my life and how I'm going to live. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. It's something I could talk about for hours, right? It gets really deep into
Me
the
too.
really deep into how our society has ended up where it is.
That's so true. Okay. I love it, but I love it because I think it's very important. I see more and more people are super interested in what I'm doing and how I'm talking about stuff, but at the same time, they're so afraid of doing it the same way. So I have to prove them that I do survive. I'm good. Let's do whatever the fuck we want. Instead of looking back to a system that is just crushing our souls, I don't see that anymore. Okay, back to self-custody. Tell me, what is the perfect way to store your Bitcoin?
Well, and here's a really that's a really good question because the answer is there is no off-the-shelf perfect answer to this question. The reason is it kind of depends on the person. It depends on their level of skill and their level of comfort with the different technologies that you'll have to use, and also a little bit to do with their lifestyle, right? So I'll give you an example, which is everyone should look at using hardware wallets, right, as sort of signing devices for their Bitcoin. Now, obviously, you're going to have to back up your seed phrase to access this hardware wallet to say like a steel plate, right? That's a pretty common way that people will back these things up onto a physical steel plate. Your seed phrase never ends up on an internet connected device or stored anywhere digitally, right? Now, that's a pretty good solution for most people. However, let's imagine I don't know, you're a digital nomad and you change country every 2 months and you're just zipping around the world. All of a sudden, maybe moving this steel plate with all your seed words on and jumping around all these different countries now is maybe not as good for you because, I don't know, every time you move house, you seem to lose stuff, right? Like if you're constantly moving your life around, it'll become a lot easier to lose your seed phrase. Another example I'll give you. Some people will have a multi-sig setup where they have different seeds in different geographical locations all around the world. Now, that's really secure because it's really difficult for an attacker to visit three different countries, find your seed, and steal your money. But it's also more difficult for you to access your money. I mean, we
So true.
saw, for example, in COVID, they stopped us all traveling. Now, if part of your seed phrase that you need to access is in another country and the government stopped all plane travel, now I'm not saying, any one way is necessarily better than the other. I think the point I want to make is that there's no perfect setup that doesn't have some sort of attack surface or some way that it could go wrong. So the best way to approach this is to, well, I mean, like I harped on about earlier, go and find a professional who does this for a living and has been doing it for a long time. So take Tony from the Bitcoin Way, for example, that you spoke to. All right, Bitcoin's only 15 years old, but Tony has been in the business of protecting critical data for decades. And all right, Bitcoin's new, but the challenge is the same. How do you protect a critical piece of data? And Tony will be the kind of person who can walk you through all the different it's like a decision tree. You start at the top and you work through all these different decisions, making the right call that works best for your situation. And I think that, you know, there's so many options out there and it can get a bit confusing that unless you're really into that world, the absolute best investment you can make is just paying for a coach. I mean, look, take my example, right? We had all our Bitcoin stolen from us. If I could go back in time and give Tony half of my stack to make sure I held on to the other half, I would be happy to pay him. I'd give Tony $500,000 to save my $1 million, right? Well, luckily for everyone who's not already lost their money, Tony doesn't charge anywhere near $500,000 to protect your money. So, if your entire wealth is stacked in Bitcoin, that you've probably made a great investment. Well done. There's another investment you now need to make, and it's either a time investment to sit down and teach yourself self-custody, or what I think might be a little bit better is some time and some money into an investment to hire a coach to get you up to speed very quickly and to essentially protect everything that you've worked so hard for. You know, I don't want to lay it on really thick, but I do want to encourage people to take this seriously by saying, you know, look, I'd held that money for 10 years and I had delayed my gratification in ways that most people will never understand. You know, like not going on these trips that I'd like to go to, not going on these holidays.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get too personal about this, but, you know, me and my fiance are getting married in April. So I have a wedding to pay for. We were planning on moving house. To go back to absolute zero is crazy. I mean, I feel like I just came out of university. Like, I have no capital, right? It's nuts.
I feel you. It's so hard.
Oh, man. You know, and I'm doing okay. It's fine. Like, you know, I'll figure it out, right? But, oh, man, like, look, if you're trying to if you're trying to save yourself a couple of grand by not using a coach, like, it's crazy not to make that investment. So I learned the hard way, and I'm just trying to encourage everyone else, like, you know, get your skills up, get to training, learn how to do it, hire a coach if you need to, but you got to take this stuff so much more seriously. We got really complacent and it bit us in the ass, and I'll kick myself forever for that, you know?
I will kick you for that because it hurts me. It has nothing to do with me, but it hurts me for sure because all that stuff you put aside, instead of enjoying that, that is so crazy to put that in Bitcoin. Okay, before we end that episode, I have a very personal question for you. And if it's too personal, just tell me to shut the fuck up, okay? But you grew up with a very cool dad. Please tell me, how did that influence you? Because I see the pattern. My kid, I really hope that one day he will be like, oh, my mom, she was so cool. And his establishment. How did that influence you in the long run? Like,
you know what? The greatest gift my dad ever gave me was being able to think for myself. You know, he drilled it into me early on. You know, just because someone tells you that's the truth, it might be, but it also might not be. And you need to focus on not who is saying it, like, oh, it's some official or someone with a shiny badge. You should only pass the information based on the quality of their argument. They could be some highly decorated academic or a teacher or a politician. If they're trying to tell you something that just doesn't make sense to you, evaluate it for yourself. And if it doesn't make sense to you, don't just accept it because it came from an authoritative figure. You know, we used to talk about things like, you're probably aware of like the Milgram experiments that look into, you know, how people will stop thinking and just follow anyone's instructions if they wear a lab coat or they look like they're in a position of authority. And I tell you what, nothing has served me better throughout my life than that knowledge that, you know, nobody owns the truth and you can go and seek it for yourself. I'll give you an example. I'm extremely happy that I never took any of these vaccines, for example. I know that might be controversial with some people. The only reason that I managed to avoid that is because, you know, I'd already learned that the pharmaceutical companies over the last 20 years have committed countless crimes. They've been caught mis-selling products for a long time. You know, they caused the opioid crisis in the US by lying about the fact that their drugs were addictive. I mean, that's caused untold carnage across millions of families, right? I mean, it's wild. You had the thalidomide, what would you call it, scandal, you know, where, I mean, I don't know this one that well, but they were giving drugs to expectant mothers, and then the kids were coming
Yes,
out without born
Contargan.
without limbs.
Yeah.
Some, yeah. And so what I couldn't get my head around was people just trusting these people just implicitly and just saying, well, they must be good people, they must always do the right thing, when history's shown us time and time again that they don't. So look, you know, I'm not a virologist, and when it came out and they said, Rick, you must take this vaccine, I thought, I'm just going to play this sensibly. I'm going to wait a couple of months and see how it pans out. If it turns out that everyone who didn't take the vaccine is now falling over in the street and dying, then yeah, I'll go and get one. And they seem so keen to give it to me, I'm pretty sure they'll be cool with that, right? On the other hand, if it turns out that the vaccine's pretty useless or risky, then me waiting 2 or 3 months to see how it pans out, again, it's just, I mean, you know, that's like a, I'm almost like playing it like a gambler, right? I'm like, what are the sensible way to play the odds here? But you know, just, I guess you go into these things and you think, yeah, I don't trust anybody just on the basis of who they are, and it helps you avoid a lot of pitfalls in life. I think it will improve your life in immeasurable ways. I'd have never got into Bitcoin if I listened to the status quo. I'd have ended up taking these vaccines. I wouldn't have educated myself beyond what I was taught at school and university, and my life would be less rich for it. So, yeah, thinking for yourself is the greatest thing you can pass on to your kids, I think.
That's so nice. Thank you so much. And regarding all the stuff you mentioned, for everyone who's listening, you will find all the stuff in the podcast description. So happy Bitcoin hodling for everyone. Thank you so much for being on my podcast. I learned tons, and I really hope that we see each other again on my podcast. Thank you so much.
Yeah, me too. Well, Alex, you know, I'm still working on some things. You know, we're building some like apps and stuff like that on the Lightning Network, and we're trying to like give back and contribute and that sort of stuff. So, hey, listen, I would love to come back and speak to you maybe with a story that's a little more positive, right? Not so much about me getting
Yes.
all my money stolen, but maybe because we built something cool for the community and stuff like that. So, we'll keep working on that. And yeah, it was great to meet. You know, I'm really deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, but probably not so much down the, you know, the home parenting and growing food. I mean, I love to grow food, by the way. Like, I'm a bit green fingered. I've always loved it. But you know, we're trying to have kids next year and stuff like that. So like, that world is really interesting to me. And that it's funny, right? Because I want to go down those rabbit holes as well. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's really interesting to meet people that just get it and think the same. It's really nice.
Same. Love it. Awesome. Thank you so much. For real.
Jetzt hast du die Clemens, aber weil sie nicht auf dem Computer sitzen kann. Clemens, du bist doch schon mal auf dem Computer. Mit dir rede ich nicht.
Du hast mir so kurz die Ohren runter. Von da.
Der kommt mein Bach. Noch. Noch kleine Bäche.